This episode of This Is Only a Test is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TEST.
Hey, let's start the show.
It's October 10th, 2013. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith, seated directly to my left in the seat typically occupied by Norman Chan.
I stole it.
You stole it. Lloyd Case, how you doing, sir?
Hi, good to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you as always.
Is that an octopus on your shirt or a squid?
I think it is a squid-like octopus. My hunch is that the guy who drew this t-shirt maybe wasn't so down on his cephalopod anatomy.
Okay.
So to your left in the seat normally occupied by our guest is Norman Chan.
Hello again.
You've been bumped out, Norm. How do you feel about coconut water? Are you pro or con?
We're not going to have this conversation again. This is going to happen. You know, for Lloyd, this is a once in a while thing, but it happens frequently.
It does happen.
Conversations about coconut water?
No. The start and stop on the podcast. I'm going to go ahead and tell you what it is. We have 15 things going on at once, and there's nobody else here today. We're the only ones in the room.
There's probably an entire podcast that's in the ether. Entire full length worth of podcasts.
The only time we really lost stuff was like that one that went for 15 or 20 minutes.
It's several times.
It's less often than you think. It's like okay. Me miffing, muffing.
Oh, we talked about coconuts and then also coconut water and macaroons. And
there was a lot of nonsense gone to the ether.
We're not going
to
go there again.
But there is important business that we need to recap.
Right.
Octobercast. Lloyd, you're going to be there.
Yes.
We're going to do this again.
Yes.
For a while, I thought we might not because. It's dumb. It's real. It's a real bad day. 24 hours. It's good for you. You come in for an hour, say hi, and then you go on your merry way. But for us, we do that 24 times.
I think I want to come in Saturday morning if you guys have been doing this for 19 or 20 hours.
Okay.
And bring a dexterity game with me.
Oh, that's a good idea. Like Jenga. We can just sit and play Jenga on the table.
Well, lots of coffee will also help.
Yeah. We'll be jacked up on Black Blood of the Earth and Red Bull.
I have a Jenga that's based on Nightmare. Nightmare Before Christmas?
I bought Jenga at a garage sale once, and when I got it home and opened it up, it turned out it was sex Jenga because people had written on the insides of the blocks where you can't see.
Right.
My assumption is this is how they played it. They had written super filthy stuff, even by the internet standards, on the inside of those blocks. So we sent that to Goodwill and bought a clean set of Jenga from Target.
You sold it to Goodwill.
For the children.
Yeah, it's for the kids.
This Nightmare Before Christmas Jenga thing.
How does that even work?
I don't know. I haven't opened the box yet. But my plan is to use it. Have you ever played Call of Cthulhu, the role-playing game?
No.
There's this mechanic in the game called Insanity. It's your investigator, which is the characters, go up in Insanity. Bad things happen, right?
Okay.
Because they're dealing with Eldritch Horrors and all that stuff. Well, instead of just doing, rolling a die and saying bad things happen to you, you pull out a Jenga block out.
Oh, that's a good
idea.
And
when the whole thing crashes down, everybody goes mad.
And that's the game lose condition?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a game mashup.
That sounds great. Octobercast, we have a date. Should we tell people what it is, Norm?
Yes, and then also explain to people what Octobercast is.
Okay. Well, let's explain first, and then we'll build some tension here.
Sure.
Octobercast is our annual 24-hour podcast marathon. That means we do this dumb show for 24 hours. Straight. There's completely sequential. There's no breaks. Occasionally we break to switch over recording stuff, but that's for like 30 seconds or something like that. We're going to stream it on YouTube this year. We're looking at streaming on Twitch as well, because I know that there are entire swaths of the world that are unserved by YouTube video streaming at this point.
HD video streaming.
We have HD capabilities. We'll do full 720p's, all 720 of them, streamed out of this wonderful office. Joey is going to be here again. He's volunteered to help manage the backside. We're going to get him on. He's not going to do guns for kids this year.
No push-ups.
That was a bad idea.
That was a great idea.
It was a great idea, but it broke Joey in kind of important ways.
So much money for kids.
I could bring
not physically. That's the important part.
I could bring a bicycle and a set of rollers.
I think we're going to take out the feats of strength this year from Oktoberfest, and we're going to go back to the roots. We're just going to have interesting conversations, and we're going to talk to you guys in the audience some. We're going to do more Skype calls. We have – this is important to note. Previously, we've done this exclusively for Child's Play, which is Penny Arcade's awesome charity that raises money to bring toys and games to kids that are in children's hospitals. And it's a great charity. They have really super low overhead, and they do a lot of good. But people asked for both more global charities, stuff that operates outside of the U.S. and the couple of countries that, that Child's Play serves, as well as some other kind of, you know, more I don't know what the right word is, but anyway, people ask for other charity options. So we're going to do three charities this year. We haven't picked out the other two yet. But the idea is to get something that's very low overhead so that they use most of the money that we send them. And hopefully something that's kind of that's a little, maybe a little smaller, a little lesser known than, say, the Red Cross or the United Way or something like that, where, you know, the $10,000 or $20,000 that we can send them will be a drop in the bucket. We want to kind of make a big impact, or as big an impact as we can. So if you have suggestions, we're taking – if you have a great charity, we're looking for stuff that is national and or global. Very low overhead is the goal, and smaller, lesser known charities. We've talked about doing things like food banks and stuff like that, but that's all super local.
Can we adopt the child?
I mean, for the money we raise, we could probably buy a child. Mm. Is that too much? Do we go too far?
You probably could, but you won't. Tell the people.
That, oh, yeah. No, we won't. We won't. And so also, the way we've set up the charity collection stuff, the money goes directly from you guys to the charity. We have an intermediary, but the overhead on that transfer is very low. It's basically just like your credit card fees to send the money to the charity of choice. The people that we're working with, which we'll talk about soon, have actually agreed to waive their whole part of it. So like basically – everything that you give to the charity will go to the charity. Nothing goes through us. Gary can't take the money and go to Vegas and put it all on black like
that
he always
would be enticing.
To. I mean, let's be true. We could double the money for the charity.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Why not? But luckily, the money doesn't. We don't touch the money, so that's all good. And the only
I don't want to gamble. I just want to touch it.
Well,
like what,
just, we'll
like,
put the number up on the screen. You can rub it.
Like what the oatmeal guy did with his blood money. His
oh, when he got it all, when he went to the bank and took it all out in $20 bills or something,
and then laid it on the floor and wrote words with it and took pictures, and
that would be pretty fun. But that and that adds a whole lot of tax complications that we've done not tested.
You could always buy a car wash.
Not everything can be solved with Breaking Bad. They're tax guys. Anyway, so we're not handling any money. It goes directly to the charity. The only money that gets taken out is Visa or MasterCard's cut. And that's pretty much it. So that's Oktoberfest. We're going to start. Should we tell them?
Yeah,
I think probably. It'd be important.
Okay.
It's getting close.
We're going to start on October 25th, 2013. That is, by my count, 15 days from today.
Oh, my God.
So it's a day and 2 weeks. We won't do a normal podcast. I guess we do have to do a normal podcast that week because we have sponsorships. So we'll figure that stuff out later. We'll start at noon Pacific time. I think it's still daylight time at that point. It may be standard by then because we're getting into that time of year. But we'll start at noon. We'll podcast not for one, not for two, not for three, but 24 straight hours. There will be a video stream on YouTube. We have in the past done a Mixlr audio stream. I haven't looked at that to make sure it'll still work, but it should be fine. So you can get us anywhere you want, basically. And you can have more than enough of us to go.
And for it to qualify as a...
Oh, so yeah, it's still daylight savings time.
Right.
For it to qualify as an Oktoberfest, at least one person here has to do the entire 24 hours, right?
I mean, in the past, people... The weak among us have to get up and do things like go to the bathroom.
You get a conductor's bottle.
Food. I know. That's what I said.
Can we get an IV?
Everybody catheter up, guys. We have food, so you know, occasional food breaks. We'll take lots of calls this year. We didn't have the stuff set up to do calls last year because we had literally just gotten the studio set up the way we needed it to do live video last year. So this year we'll be set up so we can do more calls. I think we might do another Lego race. That was fun last year. That was a good way to kill the 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock hours, I recall.
Is Gary going to be there?
Gary will be there.
Oh,
well, he said he'll be there. I mean, I'm not Gary's boss, but Gary has said he's in for the kids and the charities, the other charities, if they are not kid related charities. Patrick Klepek has volunteered to curate a horror Oculus experience for me. So I assume that I'll see lots of Slender Man and Machines for Pigs and horrifying stuff.
I wish if you could you do 24 hours in Oculus Rift?
No.
That would kill him.
Probably. That is a bad idea. I'd be cross-eyed at that.
That would be so much money for the kids.
I don't think that would raise any money for the kids. I think
that would raise how much money would you out there in the audience donate to the kids?
Norm, you're the one who gets so uncomfortable after 15 minutes in the Oculus. I think you should do the Oculus for 24 hours.
I would do it
for
24 hours if that would bring in a lot of pledges.
We're going to have the ability to do stretch goals and stuff like that this year, I think, too. So we'll keep up on all that. We're pretty excited about it.
$1 for every minute over 4 hours in the Oculus Rift.
Okay. Norm's in.
I mean,
I will give you $1 for every hour over 4 hours.
Every minute over 4 hours.
That's fine. Whatever. You're not going to get to 4 hours.
Well, I think that's a good stretch goal.
Right.
4 hours in the Oculus Rift.
Powered up.
And we're going to get you a long cord so you can wear it to the bathroom and everything.
Okay.
There's no taking it off at all because that'll break the cycle.
Absolutely, yeah. That's opportunity to raise for another hour, $60 for every pledge.
Yeah,
I like this idea.
If you go the whole 20 hours, you could raise $1,200.
24 hours. Oh, 20 plus hours.
Yeah.
Over four.
Yeah.
No
taking it off. As soon as you take it off, it resets.
That sounds very fair.
Okay. And you have to wear headphones too.
Well, then how are you going to podcast?
Well, that's your problem. You're the one doing this for the charity, man.
Well, the headphones would be for podcasting.
Okay.
You can do a splitter.
Yeah, we can pipe two feeds in.
That's
scary
great.
Music and blah, blah, blah. Okay, anyway, so that's Oktoberfest.
And the rule is that the person doing it has no control over what game is being played.
Oh, that's why curated. You have to stay in the horrible. And if you punch out, I think if you punch out, you just have to pay $50 to the charity. That should be the rule.
That's too easy a cop out.
Okay. And you have to do the rest of the podcast without pants.
Unrelated.
You really want to do that?
For the kids.
Yeah. And you willing to do that to the viewers?
The thing is, I want to hear stretch challenge pitches.
Yeah, things that you guys want us to do.
That would compel people or compel you to donate money.
I'm going
to
give one thing that I am not going to do on camera.
You should do the thing that works on Kickstarter, you know, for stretch goals. Anything that involves miniatures. You should have miniatures of something.
Well, the thing I was thinking is that, like, there's some stuff that would make for a bad podcast if we did it during the show. But maybe if we reach certain donation goals, we do as a standalone video after the show as, like, a reward. So, for example,
Red Hot there.
It's fine, but I'm not going to eat a ghost pepper on the show when we have 6 hours to go.
That's why you wait till the very end.
And I'm also not going to do it at the very end because I want to go home and go to sleep. So, I would do it the next Friday. So that, you know,
not quite the same thing.
If Mad Men has taught me anything, it's the delaying gratification makes it all the sweeter. So
no, instant gratification is no. Okay. Is the rule.
Anyway, post your suggestions in the comments. We'll do horrible things for you guys to give money to the kids and other places. Anything else on Oktoberfest? I think that's it. Maybe play a board game this year, Jenga?
Yeah, or something.
Something. Okay. Sounds good.
It's the weekend before Halloween. Do something.
It's the weekend of Halloween parties even. So you can watch Oktoberfest, go to your Halloween parties on Saturday night. You're ready to go.
Halloween parties before or after Halloween?
I've been invited to a couple of Halloween parties that are before already. Some are on the date. The traditionalists.
Halloween is on a
Wednesday or something.
This year?
Let's see. It's 5 days after Saturday.
Wednesday or Thursday?
Thursday this year.
Thursday. A long weekend. Yeah.
Should we talk about some news, gentlemen? Or coconut water? I mean, there's coconut water talk to be had.
Let's talk about the news.
Okay.
Coconut's not a fruit.
It's a nut?
I think it's a nut.
Have you ever husked a coconut? Have you ever opened one up with a machete?
We're having this conversation again.
No, we didn't talk about the...
we didn't talk about the opening.
I have not opened one with a machete, but I have husked one open with a big knife. Open.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like the nut or the whole thing with the fibrous stuff and everything?
Well, the fibers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's very tough.
It is a hard thing to do. The machete makes it much easier. You have better swing on it. It has to be sharp. Cut your foot off. This week, Tony Fadell's company, Nest, unveiled their second product. So these are the guys that make the what they call a smart thermostat, and I would say anybody who's tried to program a thermostat probably will agree.
It's a pretty cool thermostat.
It's a pretty good thermostat.
I'm not convinced about the smoke alarm thing, though.
Well, so the smoke alarm is the second product. It's called the Nest Protect. It's $130. It is a combination smoke carbon monoxide sensor, but it doesn't. It's less designy than the Nest is. It seems like
right.
That doesn't have a screen.
Well, it doesn't have a screen. I mean, there's not a whole lot you do to a smoke detector.
You're interfacing directly with it.
Yeah. But
it
has
connected to the internet, though, right?
It's connected to the internet, connects to your Wi-Fi, and it has, like, motion controls. And instead of starting with the piercing scream, it launches off with a, hey, there's smoke in the living room, or hey, there's smoke in the bedroom.
I have
or,
a smoke detector that does that already.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
It has a voice.
Do you like it?
It works okay. I mean, it's only gone off once.
Does it give you a, is it tiered? So depending
it's
on
got,
the amount of...
It's got radio communication. So I have two of them, right? And it actually will talk to the one in the other rooms. And it, so that, for example, let's say there's a fire in the kitchen or just smoke in the kitchen, right? So I will hear it from the one down in my office saying there's smoke in the kitchen.
Even though you would normally not be able to hear.
Right. Yeah. Unless it was a piercing wail, right?
Yeah. So I have a relatively small house. And like for me... The smoke detector thing is a real hassle because the one you're supposed to have them in all of the bedrooms and the hallway and one on each floor in the hallway. Yeah. Well, especially if you do the $130 ones. But what ends up happening is the ones in the hall because my hallway and the kitchen are right next to each other. Basically, anytime I boil water, any photoionization smoke detector I've ever used goes off, which sucks. It's really I boil water a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been on a quest to find a nice smoke detector that you can turn off and snooze and all that stuff and say, hey, ignore this for the next 2 hours. It'll be fine.
Snoozing. Don't you just want better detection?
Well, but you want both. Like the thing is the cheap smoke detectors don't have – the only way to get a smoke detector that doesn't have photoionization that I can tell is to get a cheap one. And then they don't have the thing that lets you turn it off if you actually make smoke. And since it's next to the kitchen – occasionally, there's a little bit of smoke.
I have another tip regarding smoke detectors. It's buy the right kind of batteries, too.
Oh, okay.
Buy these extreme long lifespan 9-volt batteries, so you don't have to, you know, wake up in the middle of the night with a chirp.
That's always great.
Every 6 or 8 months.
And if you have 7 or 8 of those batteries,
right.
Then you're like figuring out which room the high-pitched chirp that lasts for a tenth of a second is.
Right. I've ever had... In two years, I haven't replaced the batteries in my smoke detectors.
Yours are wired into the house, probably.
I think maybe.
But you should still replace the batteries.
Modern houses do have them wired in, which is kind of nice.
That they all go off at once.
Well, that could be radio,
I want
too.
The product that tells has how many days since the last smoke detector incident. I want that accident sign.
The app?
A little laser projector that projects it on the wall.
Oh, no. I want the flip card.
Do yours go off frequently,
they go
Norm?
Very frequently.
Because people are bad at cooking?
Yes, and also smoke kind of hovers in the high ceilings.
Oh, because it goes up your stairway thing. Yeah. So it's $130. They're all connected. They connect to Wi-Fi. You can use an app to control them, to turn them off, and to tell where there's an incident. It'll tell you that there's an incident even if you're not in your house, which seems good. And I think it'll even call the police for you, right? Or call the fire department.
Just going to put security companies out of business then?
I'm okay with putting security. Let me go ahead and tell
that
you.
That and
security,
a QuickCam Pro, you know, you're in set.
Well, security companies are right up there with the cable company in terms of, like, skeeziness and value, lack of value.
I didn't say it was a bad thing.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch South Park last week?
Did not.
No.
And there was a whole bit on the cable company. It was very, very funny.
Are they pro or anti-cable company?
Anti-cable company.
It's hard to believe that. I'm interested. The thing that I thought was neat is that when you make the motion that you usually make in front of the smoke detector that never does anything to knock the smoke away and make it stop going off, that just snoozes it. So that's good. The voice commands come out of all the house. They had data that says, like, with small children, they respond better to voice commands than the.
I'm sure that the shrieking wail terrifies small children.
It's not awesome. So that's a Nest Protect. $130 a pop is about twice the cost of a normal premium smoke detector, in my experience. It is carbon monoxide at the same time, which we're all required to have in all of our rooms in California now.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody upgrading? No. I bought one for the bad room.
I have no desire. I mean, the Nest I signed up almost day one, but this doesn't really kind of float my boat too much.
Yeah, I can see that.
By the way, as an aside,
okay,
has anybody really thought through the problems with having multiple Wi-Fi connected devices in their house and what that does to your router?
Well, there are issues, but I got to assume that these are real low. I mean,
no, you
have 200 IP addresses.
It has nothing to do with bandwidth. It's that with a lot of routers, not everyone, and not some of the newer ones, but with a lot of routers, every time you connect, the bandwidth gets halved. You don't have to be transmitting any data. You can just have a device logged in.
With G stuff?
Yes.
Does it dedicate bandwidth to individual connections? I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm. That's the problem.
So it's with that, but that stopped with N, right?
I think with some N routers.
Okay.
I'm not sure it's built into the standard.
You've got to reset your router every other day.
Yeah. Cool. Right.
That's not good. I just got a new router. Well, we'll talk about that later. But
anyway.
There's AMD stuff. I feel like we should have talked about this last week. We might have missed
right.
it. Or we might have recorded before the embargo was up. I can't remember.
Right. The one new thing that they announced, they didn't talk about very much.
So they announced three things. They announced a new GPU.
Right.
Which they didn't really talk about yet.
They talked a little bit about the specs. I mean, how many compute units it has and how many transistors and all this. Six billion transistors, I think, was the number they threw
around. Is this the GPU that's in the new consoles?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's
the
a couple generations back.
The GPU that's in non-consoles is just a somewhat souped-up version of an APU.
Oh, but I mean, I assumed it was an APU plus more shader operators, shader.
Yeah, but I mean, this thing has like, you know, 20 times as much as, no, I'm exaggerating. It has a lot more than is in your Xbox One or a PS4.
Okay.
How is it different from?
It's supposed to be faster than GeForce Titan is what they're throwing around.
Well, how is the architecture
compute
different?
Compute or games?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then last generation. How is the architecture different?
I don't know. They're calling it enhanced GCN. Graphics Compute Next is their term for their architecture. So it's supposed to be an enhanced version. It has more tessellation units, more compute units, higher bandwidth, all the things that you want. 512-bit, I think, is what they were throwing around.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So it's going to be a big chip, and I think
it has a 512-bit memory bus.
Yes,
so that's bananas.
It's going to be pretty expensive, and 6 billion transistors. It's not going to be a small chip, even at 28 nanometers.
Yeah, no kidding. Is that out yet? No.
No, they announced it. They didn't completely announce price, but they're actually going to launch the official product, I think, later this month. I don't think it's that far out.
Oh, that's good.
Don't actually know when it's going to ship.
So
and it's three tiers of cards.
Yes. Now, the other two products are nothing new.
So, yeah, so this is now the third time that they've rebadged 7,000, or second time they've rebadged 7,000 series cards.
This is the first time, I think, to my knowledge, that they rebadged desktop retail parts.
Yeah, but the 8,000 series is just a rebadged 7,000 series for OEMs and laptops and stuff, right? So this is 7,000 series. Is it faster at all? Do they clock stuff up?
It's a tiny bit faster. When I say tiny bit, I mean really tiny bit. But what they've done is they've substantially decreased the price, right? So in the past, a Radeon HD 7970 would cost you, a gigahertz edition would cost you about $450.
Yeah.
The R8.
So there's a new naming scheme,
yeah,
too.
Right. It's called the R series, not HD anymore. The R8, I think I got the numbers right, 280. Mm-hmm. Is equivalent to the 7970, but it'll cost about $300.
7970, but it'll cost, so it's $150 off.
Right. And then the equivalent to the 7870 is about $50 to $75 cheaper.
Have they added the ability to do like live streaming of frame buffer for stuff like SteamOS consoles and stuff like that?
I don't know.
Like, I'm curious about that because that's an NVIDIA advantage if they haven't.
Is that built in the GPU?
It's built in the GPU.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
H.264 encoding.
It's not something I do, so I don't really.
Theoretically, they could do it on. On newer Intel CPUs as well, right?
Yes.
But I bet there's a latency hit for that.
No, I bet you on Intel CPUs there's less latency because of
an
issue.
But it has to go out from the GPU,
It's right there. Yeah, but it's connected to directly to the memory bus as opposed to
that's true.
Going through PCI Express.
That's true. Okay. So, those are the two GPUs. I'm sure we'll find out more about the 290.
Right.
R9 290.
So the R8 and R7s are all rebadged 7,000 series.
So these are competing with the lower end NVIDIA.
Yeah, I think 70. They've done a few things like add better power management, but really it's the same GPUs.
Okay. The big thing I think that they announced, and this is the interesting thing, and there was some stuff that I think we were supposed to interpolate from what they said, but basically they have this Mantle thing, which is a cross Xbox One and PC to the metal level API for graphics, for shader graphics.
You mean like Glide? Oh, sorry, sorry.
We're not supposed to. I don't think we're supposed to say that, man.
Well, I got to be fair about that. Yeah, shader stuff. Glide never did shaders because it was pre-shader.
Way before.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's just the DirectX 9 or the current DirectX shader language that you can then run the shaders instead of having to go through all the Windows API stuff.
Right.
And it seems like it would make cross-platform develop. Like the thing, they said that there's a 9x performance shader increase in efficiency due to, I can't remember what it was, less call of a specific kind of call that I didn't really understand because I'm not that deep into it anymore.
Don't remember.
But the place it seemed like it was more interesting to me is that it will let people who are doing low-level development on the Xbox One and presumably also the PS4 bring that work directly to the PC.
Well, the other thing that immediately came to my mind was SteamOS.
Yeah.
So, I mean, port that to SteamOS and you have something.
Well, assuming people start using the API.
Right.
So the question is this going to be...
Wasn't Battlefield 4 the first one?
Battlefield 4 is the first one. Yeah. They didn't say... They specifically mentioned Xbox One, is my understanding. We weren't at the event because they did it in Hawaii and it was kind of a junket. Apparently they mentioned the Xbox One, but I didn't see anybody talking about the PS4 as part of this. So... Even though those are presumably almost exactly the same APU.
Which kind of puzzles me a little bit because the Xbox One's graphics API are already pretty close to the metal, so I'm not sure what's going on there.
I honestly, it seemed like it's more a way to bypass the DirectX stuff and get... I wonder if this is related to all the frame jitter stuff because ATI took a pretty big hit on the frame rate jitter stuff. So.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm just glad to see new GPU from AMD after it seems like up forever, but it's probably been, what, a year and a half?
Right.
So
what else do they have for that business?
Well, they're selling a lot of... They're theoretically going to sell a lot of consoles, right?
Yes.
I think that's the goal.
Who's used an AMD desktop CPU?
I think my next budget build is going to be based around it just because, A, I kind of want to play around with it a little bit because I haven't done much with AMD recently, and B, they're dirt cheap.
Yeah,
I mean, if you don't go with the
APU-based one,
I'm not sure yet. But even the Phenoms, or what do they call them now? I forget what they call them now. Anyway, they're pretty cheap. I mean, like unless you go for the stupidly 5.5 gigahertz overclock thing, that's $1,000.
Yeah,
but all the other ones are really cheap.
I've been looking at SteamOS machines, and the hardware specs that Valve released last week in their forums mm-hmm. about the scale. The range of machines that they're going to send out, which range from like Titan, high-end Intel and Titan configurations.
They're fairly, very, very careful to say these are merely reference systems. This is not what we plan on, you know, having our OEM ship or anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like they're sending out a crazy range all the way down to integrated stuff almost. So those APUs seem to make a lot of sense for that because you put an APU on with a decent GPU in it on a mini ITX board, and then you can play some indie games natively and run your... stream the stuff from the desktop
require on video,
right?
On the desktop side, but who knows on the SteamOS side, it should require whatever,
right?
Should just work.
I have a certain amount of skepticism about SteamOS in general. I say I'll believe in SteamOS when EA ports Origin to SteamOS.
Well,
then I'll start to believe.
So here's the thing about SteamOS. I think that streaming stuff is really is the beachhead, mm-hmm. right? Because there's a lot of people with big TVs in their living room who, for whatever reason, either want to play games there and can't because it's not, they don't want to put a PC in their living room,
right.
Or it's too far to run a cable or whatever the issue is. And I think the streaming stuff is going to be more popular than we think, especially if they have like a $99 box,
right?
But anyway, so that's the AMD thing. The Mantle thing, I think, is kind of interesting. It's a little weird to roll out an API in 2013, it seems like to me. But I think the Glide comparisons were kind of unfair.
I agree. I was being snarky.
Lloyd.
I'm never snarky.
What are you shocked.
On the internet?
The Samsung's had a couple...
Speaking of being snarky.
Speaking of being snarky, yeah. So I
got to tell the story because I'm sitting here and we get the New York Times at home. I mean, it's the paper edition, right? And so I bring it in and I start to flip through the front section. And it's like suddenly I hit these full page color things for Samsung smartwatches. I'm thinking, how many pages does this go on? I keep flipping pages. And it's an 8-page ad section.
Wow.
In the center of the front section of the New York Times.
Well, you only do that if you have a really amazing product that you want to make sure everybody knows about, right?
Uh-huh.
The Samsung Gear, which Galaxy is their Gear. Smart Galaxy Gear, which is their smartwatch reviews, started coming out this week. And I don't want to oversimplify this, but they were real bad.
I think one person liked it.
Who was the one person that liked it? I didn't see any positive reviews. I saw one that was like, I might use this occasionally.
It screamed to me, we got to get this out before Apple gets theirs out, yeah. Kind of approach.
Ugh. The reviews mentioned poor battery life, that it was too big and too heavy to actually wear, that it made it difficult to type and use a computer. It was.
How about the software experience?
I don't remember specific software stuff. It only works with Galaxy phones, right?
Is there an iOS app for it? Probably not.
I can't imagine there would be. Most of the complaints I saw were due to battery life and the actual physical size of the hardware. Was there specific software stuff you wanted to call out?
Is it larger than the old iPod, the old square iPod?
Oh, I think it has to
be. Wait, you mean the Nano?
The Nano, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's larger than the Nano. It's thicker.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's huge.
I mean, I saw people used to wear those as wristwatches. Remember that? Mm-hmm.
It looks like a diver's, like a big-ass diver's watch.
And it has a camera.
And it has a camera. I mean, I'm all for Dick Tracy. Like, I like the idea of Dick Tracy being watching.
They do good advertisements, though.
Are you going to talk about the Lord's thing?
The what thing?
The Lord thing.
Lord thing?
The singer, you mean?
So the singer, you know the song? The I don't know the name of the song.
I don't know the song. I just recently have heard of her because she's sort of the anti-Miley Cyrus.
And so. Anti-Bieber, yeah. So she has a song that's about not being materialistic and being a teenager and just kind of doing things that you like because you like doing them and, you know, who gives a shit. So Samsung licensed that phone, that ad, that song for an ad for, I assume, the Galaxy Gear. I'm not sure if it's that or a phone where
a song about not caring about material stuff.
Uh-huh.
To sell material.
Hold
stuff.
On, but it gets, but wait, there's more. the ad has a charming, raffishly dressed millionaire going into the slums that are post-apocalyptic and kind of burned out to talk to sell phones and get tablets and stuff to children.
Jesus.
Ruffians, little ruffians. It's great.
Is this Samsung?
Samsung.
Holy crap. Samsung. That's not the ad I was thinking of.
Oh, which ad?
There's a Galaxy Gear ad that calls attention to all the wristwatches in science fiction and television.
Oh, that sounds like a good ad.
And that was a very good
now
ad.
That's what you said sounds like the 1% is trickling down.
Yeah, of course. if you go down and
that's going to sell a lot of watches, I'm sure.
Look, if you could be a billionaire, if you give us $400 for this watch or however much it is, there are a lot. When you search for Galaxy Gear, there are a lot of things that start with why I prefer the Pebble to the Galaxy Gear, and you know that's the best case. It's not a terrible. I mean, it doesn't look terrible. It looks real thick. Like if you look at it head on, it looks pretty good. But as soon as you get the side view, it's beefy. In the other category of products that I don't understand, Samsung announced the Galaxy Round phone yesterday. So it was billed as the world's first curved smartphone, which immediately set off my spider sense because I was like, oh wait, wasn't the Nexus S and a bunch of other Samsung, like, wasn't the Galaxy S curved? But they're curved from top to bottom, so it's kind of like you put it up to your ear and it kind of cups your face. This is curved from side to side because it's a 5.7-inch phone, and that's the only way it will fit in your pocket comfortably, I assume.
Well, so
well, why is that a bad thing then?
It just looks really unwieldy.
I mean,
women I know who wear these really tight jeans probably will like that.
Yeah, like
that their pockets aren't large enough. Your thighs,
your thighs are curved that way.
But I put my phone on the desk, and I don't want it to tilt side to side, although they did build UI stuff into the phone. So when you have it on your desk and you tilt it side to side,
people
you can
love
check notifications and stuff, which seems it just seems like a real silly product to me. I think 5.7-inch phones are kind of silly, though. What do I know?
5.7-inch is a very big size for a phone.
Speaking of things that are small-ish, there's an iPad event. October 22nd, as reported by All Things D. I don't think invitations have gone out yet, but they've been pretty good on this stuff in the past.
Likely just an iPad event?
I assume that it probably also has to do with Mavericks because they released the GM to the developers the other day.
Right.
So, you know.
What about MacBook Pros, Retinas, or Mac Pros?
Who knows?
Yeah. Well, they quietly rolled out the desktops, the iMacs.
I'm sorry? They did a quiet update of the desktops, so that's done. The desktop Mac Pro has been, you know, on the table for almost 5 months now.
Yeah. My buddy, the Mac developer, Mac graphics guy, is just watering at the mouth for one of these things. He wants to get one as soon as it comes out. He's using one of the old Mac Pros, the generation before the one that they're selling.
That's what we're on here.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at the stuff that's not on those machines, it's hard when you deal with big video files, especially. We do a lot of stuff. Like, we'll shoot in the road, capture it to a portable hard drive, to the USB 3 hard drive. It goes through a Retina MacBook, or my MacBook Air, Norm's MacBook Air, whatever. And you get USB 3 on all that stuff. And then you plug it into the Mac Pro, and it's USB 2, and it takes an hour and a half to transfer a 20-minute video.
Right.
So, yeah, we're excited about new Mac Pros here. I understand that. We also I wouldn't expect to see any iMac stuff. It wouldn't surprise me if we see a Retina. Because Retina's due for Haswell, right? They haven't stealth updated that yet. Retina MacBook.
The Air.
Retina Air. Wait, MacBook what?
Is the Mac, the 13-inch or 15-inch Retina MacBook isn't Haswell yet. Oh, is it?
That is due for a Haswell update.
Yes, as is the 13-inch Retina as well. Yes.
But it's
I think those will both get stealth updates.
It's the iPad mini specs that kind of have me interested because it's actually going to be an iPad mini, not an iPad last two generation mini.
So the thing that I'm most excited about is the iPad updates. You're saying everything's getting A7 full size and mini.
Bear in mind,
and Retina mini.
But not A7X?
We don't know. It's all rumor right now, folks.
All X means is a higher clock typically, right?
Yeah.
So, like,
which matters.
Oh, it does matter. But compared to where the mini is now with iOS 7, it does not matter.
Yes. I've been talking to a couple of iOS developers.
Yeah.
And the mini is a giant headache. It's like it has exclusive bugs that only where an Apple only have problems with the mini and nothing else in Apple's lineup.
It's so I've had one. I've used that's been my iPad for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the size, but the fact that it's an iPad 2 essentially in terms of hardware is pretty grim. And it wasn't really as you don't notice it until you start playing things that are kind of chuggy on current iPads or iPad 3s even. Like that Gunner Z game, which is real slow. Like, it runs great on my wife's iPad 3. It's real slow on the mini.
Right.
And that was because
iPad 2, iPhone 4, same hardware. So
they chose that because it was a better profit margin.
I think that they chose that. I feel like the mini was testing the waters. I think that they didn't know whether that was going to be a product. They were selling it at a much higher price than anybody else was selling 7-inch tablets.
And yeah, putting a processor in there that's two generations slower than
I think they were hedging the bet. Because I think that they didn't want to spend a whole ton of money building out R&D to make it higher resolution, bigger battery, and faster processor.
Using something that existed already, they could easily roll something out.
Right. They used the third spin or whatever it was of the iPad 2, the A5? Is that what it is? A4.
That's like a double bet in the wrong direction. High price and lower
They sold
production.
A lot of them.
Well, yeah. They sold a bunch of them. Wow. So, I mean, I think if they... And the thing is, though, with the Kindle stuff that's out, the new Kindle Fires that are out,
specs wise at least are pretty awesome.
I mean, it doesn't even matter specs wise because the screen is really good.
Right.
I mean, we don't know what the screen on that looks like. The screen on the second gen Nexus 7 looks great.
Right.
And if you're looking at a Nexus, if you're at Best Buy and you have a new Nexus 7 and an iPad Mini in your hands, the iPad Mini looks like garbage, and the new Nexus 7 looks great. So why would you not, they're not going to capture those people, and they want them.
The Mini
is... Nexus 7. Did you mean Kindle?
I meant Nexus. I meant new Nexus 7. The second gen Nexus 7 is a 1080p screen, too.
Right. So. Yeah.
You think that iPad Mini is positioned to be the better selling and the flagship iPad?
I think that that is the... Yeah, I think that the 7-inch is the default, and the 10-inch is the upsell.
10-inch is the... If you want like a 7-inch MacBook Pro.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you think about it; it's the same resolution.
You probably get more battery life on.
Is it going to be the same resolution or the same pixel density?
It'll be the same resolution and greater pixel density.
So you think it's going to be 20x15?
They're not going to change that strategy.
Technically, a better, higher pixel density screen, equivalent processor, maybe smaller capacity battery, but you have the advantages of size and weight.
I'm perfectly happy
for consumers. Yes, that's great. From a business sense, it's disastrous because the margins are going to be so much lower.
Right. That they have made it. Well, but you also have to look at Apple. They played the long game on stuff like this. So if the margins are low for 2 years, at the end of 2 years, when the cost on the screens go down, that stuff all works itself out.
Right.
They do not do low margin. They always want short term high margins.
Well, the Mini was the first low margin product they made,
and it was a shit screen and shit processor. And so this one's gonna be even worse.
But now they've built that category. Wow. And here's the thing, is if that category is the mainstream for tablets, if 7-inch is the mainstream for tablets, then they don't establish a beachhead, which they did last year, they're boned.
They got boned by aggressive pricing on Android.
It'll work out in the end. I'm perfectly fine buying low margin products.
I know. 330
that makes me happy.
Absolutely. And 330 is still much more expensive than 200.
Right.
220.
But it's you're at that point you're paying $120 for App Store. Yeah. So that is a product I will go get in line for or pre-order online, but I would wait in line for a Mini with A7 and Retina. Like that is a bomb tablet.
I still think Nexus 7 is potentially a better buy.
Oh, it's definitely a better value. Yeah. I mean, especially
and for a lot of people it's not going
to. If you're using it to browse the web and use email and stuff, it's great.
Right. But the stuff that I use on iOS, you just can't get on.
Yeah, there's
Android.
No.
Just sorry.
I've been using the Nexus 7 for ages, the new one.
Right.
And the Twitter clients are all bad. I mean, and that's just the tiniest. Somebody needs to go make Tweetbot. Just clone Tweetbot. Put that out on. The Twitterific guys wanted to make money for more than the first 3 weeks after a new version of the OS comes out. They should release on Android.
I think for a lot of people, that's fine. They can deal with it.
Well,
they're not throwing it in the drawer like
right.
they did.
The problem that app developers run into on Android is the unwillingness of Android users to actually pay for anything.
That is a massive. That's actually coming over to iOS too. There was a big article about that the other day. About 70-something% of revenue on the App Store.
I read that article. Except for productivity apps, which over 50% of the people will still pay money for.
I paid $15 or $20 for word processors and stuff like that were good. Although I have to say I looked at 1Password 4 for Mac came out the other day. It's on the App Store now. It's $40 at 20% off for $40. I'm happy to stick with the old version. suited me very well for a long time.
Software used to be so much more expensive and people are totally okay with buying it.
Well, you bought less and you did more research. I mean, so the thing about iOS is if 77% of revenue on the store is coming from free apps that have then in-app purchases
right.
to unlock, I think that's
right.
Developers just doing an end around lack of demos on Mac's Apple's app stores.
Yes, and then the other thing about the tweet that I saw that I retweeted that I thought was great? It's like, why am I willing to pay $5 for a cup of coffee but not for an app?
Like, psychological.
You get something.
Because people want to pirate stuff.
And he was talking about an app that he uses all the time. It's not even like a casual, oh, look, there's a $5 app in the App Store.
You're robbed. Well, that's ridiculous.
The thing about apps, though, is like if it's something I know I'll use all the time, and if I hold that light to 1Password, then $40 isn't too much to spend on 1Password.
Because
I use it 50 times a day, usually. But on the other hand, you know, you look at the cup of coffee and you get something, you have some enjoyment, it lasts you for 20 minutes.
And not paying $5 for that app affords you the ability to get that coffee.
Well, but it's not even about paying for the app. It's that when you don't know that, it's for the stuff that you don't know you need.
Right.
Like if I'm looking at a note syncing app and I think, oh, this might be useful, I'm not going to pay $20 for might be useful. I'll pay $20 for something that I definitely use all the time. But by not like that's one of the things I love about Android is if you want a refund on the app you have an hour, 24 hours, something depending on what the developer wants, and I think that's totally fair. I've bounced a lot of apps that just didn't work right or were bad.
This pops another thing into my head which has nothing to do with iOS or the App Store. It has to do with Adobe.
Okay.
So I don't know if you guys followed this, but Adobe rolled out their photographer's model for Adobe CC.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds interesting.
What it is you pay $10 a month instead of $20 a month. And you get Photoshop CC and Lightroom.
That's perfect. That's exactly what I want.
Yeah, they announced that last
year. Yeah. But I did that. What was really cool was I had signed up for the $20 a month Photoshop thing, and they automatically transitioned. I didn't have to call anybody. It says,
so you just got Lightroom for free.
And they cut the price in half.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's subscription-based Lightroom.
Right. Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, because, for example,
I want to pay one time for Lightroom.
No, one feature that showed but you get in Photoshop, too.
Yes.
So one feature that showed up in Photoshop CC that you can't no longer get in the client version is camera raw as a filter. which is, if you stop and think about it, that's really awesome. You can open up Camera Raw as a filter in any photograph and start doing all the Camera Raw stuff. It's great. It's fabulous.
The amount of time you spend in Photoshop is decreased by 90%.
Because of Lightroom?
Because of Lightroom. So
you develop stuff in Lightroom?
I do editing and mostly things, unless you're doing specific like layers and cropping.
Or retouches or
something. Oh, yeah, I do a lot. I mean, I do that all the time, so that's why I use Photoshop. Lightroom I use mostly for printing.
Would you guys follow the Adobe hack?
Oh,
we didn't talk about that last week.
I had to. They sent me the polite email saying you should change your password.
Oh, I didn't get the email.
It looked like a phishing email. Yeah. Followed the link.
Yes, but whenever I get an email like that from any company, I never.
You always type it in.
I always type it in. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it really read like a really well written phishing email. Yeah.
So what was the deal? They got 2.2 million customers' information, including hashed passwords and potentially credit card information. Mm-hmm. Great. Nice job, guys. This really makes me – and also they got all of the source code for the Adobe apps, right?
Not all of the – just one app.
Oh.
Which one was it? I can't remember which one it was now, but just one app.
Was it something we use or was it Bridge or something like that?
No, something fairly rare.
Okay. That's fine.
One of the high-end apps.
Okay, that's cool. But anyway, so Adobe stuff was hacked. You probably got an email. I'm looking at your Adobe Creative Cloud password was successfully reset. That was on August. I did that though. Okay, never mind. Oh no, I do have the email. Shit. I should have probably should have done that, huh? I'll get on that soon. My password for Adobe is like a 35 character with symbols and letters and all that stuff. So if they want to dictionary attack that, they're welcome to. HP. Oh, so Mavericks is any day now, probably, if you're an OS X user. We assume it'll be the same upgrade as the last one, where it's like $20 and you go to the App Store and download the thing. I don't like there's nothing. I've been running Mavericks for the last couple of weeks, and there's not a whole lot in there that's immediately jumps out as here's something that you need immediately. It's a whole bunch of like little small fixes that have made things better. And I do like having tabs and stuff in Finder, and the syncing with iOS 7 stuff is kind of nice too.
Right. And for all you half dozen or so Windows 8 users out there, we're a week away from 8.1.
Oh, really? Finally?
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
The return of the start button. I was thinking about having a little
October
party.
October 17th, I think. Might be the 18th, but I think it's the 17th.
So that's
it's in all the advertising now.
Yeah. HP launched an 11-inch Chromebook for $275.
I was actually amazed.
It looks like an okay piece of hardware.
Yeah.
It's the same stuff. It's in Samsung. The exact same Samsung.
It's the ARM processor. And
same Samsung ARM processor, dual core. All it's different is that it's more expensive and has IPS screen.
Does it have a better keyboard? That's the big thing.
IPS screen is worth paying $20 more, $50 more, whatever it is.
If you're in a market for an ultra-cheap thing that you just do word processing on, you're not doing image editing on, then saving $50 on that's 20%.
If you're really wedded to the Google ecosystem and you're using like Google Plus a lot, mm-hmm. and it's become
it's a real narrow market,
right? But it's become kind of the go-to place for a lot of photographers now, and the image quality is important to those guys. So if they have a cheap thing they can carry around to do their Google Plus stuff, it'd be great.
buy something to do Google. That's the Nexus 7.
It's an app.
it's not as easy to do your uploading of photos and all the typing and stuff.
From the tablets.
This
HP laptop comes with 2 years of 100 gigabyte Google Drive, 12 sessions of GoGo in-flight wireless, which if I did the math, that means if you actually use all of those within the year, this laptop costs $30. So that's pretty good.
Assuming you don't buy the monthly.
Well, the monthly is $40 a month or $30 a month, depending on which one you get. So, and you get 2 months of Google's All Access, Google Play Music service. Meg Whitman, along with this rollout, came out and said that HP and Microsoft are transitioning from partners to outright competitors.
Oh, no.
Because Microsoft is making devices and services, and Apple has traditionally been...
HP.
HP has traditionally been, you know, Microsoft partner number one.
Right.
They're moving out. This is official separation.
I think HP is going to continue to sell a lot of Windows boxes, but I think there's this has been going on for a number of years now. There's certainly a lot of there has been nervousness in the PC industry about what Microsoft has been doing.
Well, and when they start selling tablets and saying that they're devices and services, that's got to make people get a little nervous at Lenovo and HP and Dell.
When you sell Azure as your service, you know, your cloud-based server service, and your HP and you're selling servers for a living, what does that tell you?
Yeah. Well,
they may sell
that's more. That's
to,
more Amazon. Yeah.
They could always sell them to HP.
Yeah, they sell them to Microsoft. Yeah. So it works out all the way around. Anyway, the upshot is that we should expect to see more Android and Chrome devices in addition to the Windows line from HP.
I think HP is in a worse situation than Microsoft is.
No kidding.
Yeah,
you don't
so
say.
But Meg Whitman saying that means nothing.
HP, didn't HP make an app? Did HP sell a HP branded iPod at one point?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Was it? It was Apple manufactured, but
yes.
HP branded,
that's
right?
Correct.
Yeah. It's a real weird.
That's
company.
How they got Josh Rubenstein.
Oh, really?
Well,
this is a rumor. Yeah. Interesting.
No, that was Palm. He went to Palm.
Yeah.
Then
they
HP
bought Palm. Yeah.
It's all in the family.
Microsoft wants a new CEO by end of the year.
Okay.
No surprises.
Is it going to be the Ford CEO?
Mulally is one of the contenders. I think it's probably between, as a complete outsider with no information whatsoever about this, is speculating entirely. I would guess it's between Mulally and
might as well flip a coin.
And Elop.
Really? What happened to the guy from Ford?
Mulally is the guy from Ford.
Okay.
Yeah, those seem like, as an outsider, what they're putting out there. So
those are names I've read on multiple
websites.
I look at CEO from Ford, and it doesn't inspire me with a lot of confidence.
Ford has, I've driven Fords for a long time. They had a couple of bad years.
No. It's not Ford Motor Company, the company, because they've done a pretty good job of reinventing themselves. It's the fact that it's an old industrial company that makes giant machines as opposed to
software.
You know, yeah, right.
I kind of feel like I look at the Bobby Kotick reign at Activision, and I think he came from a soap company. He came from some old school manufacturing company. I kind of feel like maybe that's not a bad approach, is having somebody who treats this as a product rather than.
But he's not
magical.
Beloved. He's hated and has made company money.
Oh, I'm not saying he's a good guy.
But that's what Steve Ballmer's done. He made company money and has not.
But he's been hated too. So he's
exactly.
Done, yeah.
So that's not great for Microsoft to be in that position to get another Ballmer type character. Someone who wasn't even with the company from the beginning.
I don't know what can fix Microsoft at this point. If I knew that, I'd probably make a lot more money working someplace else.
Just get Mark Zuckerberg.
Remember that Microsoft still makes a lot of money and a lot of profit. I mean, it's not like it's
so does IBM,
ropes.
Lloyd.
Yeah, what's again, if you look at the perspective of the business, they're not doing horribly, right?
But they're not growing.
Right.
That's the problem. And actually, the head of the Azure department came out and said, look, the old stuff isn't growing. That's what everybody – that's what investors want. That's what the market wants. So we have to – we have to make this grow.
I've been working with a company who bought into the whole Office 365 thing, and they're just about ready to dump it now because – the admin of that thing, they say, easy to admin. It's not easy to admin. It's a pain in the ass.
I can't imagine.
It's that's like the most obtuse web interface I have ever seen.
Well, if you're used to adminning Exchange servers and stuff like that, it's probably a piece of cake.
Like my wife uses SharePoint a lot, right?
Yeah.
And local SharePoint on their local servers. And it's so much easier to manage than their web-based SharePoint on Office.
Well, because you remote into the console and you have the special interface and all that stuff, right?
And the interface is terrible. I mean, it's really – it's like – I can't – don't get me started on this.
Microsoft has been bad at the web since Microsoft.com launched in 1994. Right. You know, it's not – that's no surprise.
I mean, you compare that to, Google or Dropbox or anybody else doing the virtual storage and sharing of stuff, and it's just terrible.
Well, and the problem with the Office 365 stuff is that for people who just need a word processor and a basic spreadsheet to do expense reports and stuff, like it's hard to compete with free.
Right. And there's a period of time, even free stuff like SkyDrive, right?
Or $50 a person.
There was a period of time that SkyDrive would not take file names with dashes in the name.
Yeah.
It's like, what? I can do this on my local PC. Why can't I do it on your – anyway.
Obscure limitations.
Don't get me started.
A Microsoft specialty since the very beginning. This is fun. Final Fantasy VI, which was released in the U.S. as Final Fantasy III on the SNES originally because they didn't release 3, 4, and 5 here, is finally coming out for iOS and Android. So they're not doing the 3D remake thing that they did for 4 and 5, I guess.
I never kept track
or two,
of this. Yeah, right.
Whatever. Anyway, so for a while they did DS remakes that were like fancy tarted up graphics with 3D characters and all that stuff for cutscenes and things like that. They're not doing that for 6. They're just going to release it. But I think it's my favorite Final Fantasy game. It's probably the last one I played. And I'm looking forward to that. I just wanted to share. It's coming out for iOS and Android. And my guess is it'll be $15 or $20 because it's Square Enix and they don't give a fuck about selling stuff for cheap on the App Store.
Well, yes, but are you sure that the experience is going to be what you hope it will be?
It's a turn-based strategy game. I just need to have an A.
I remember going back to Wing Commander, you know, when they came out with Wing Commander for Windows, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, why did I do this? I stopped playing it because it just destroyed all the memories I had of Wing Commander.
Mm-hmm. Well, so they also said they're taking out a lot of the grinding. So that was the complaint about these things
like the quality of the graphics and the controls worked. And it's like, wow, you know, I can't do this anymore.
It's like TIE Fighter. I'm never going to go back and play TIE. I love TIE Fighter.
Right.
I'm never going to go back and play it again.
Yeah, I want to keep those happy memories.
Because those escort missions, I'm sure, were terrible. Absolutely positive they were bad.
You just want to see the FMV or watch. I'll watch a video.
That's all on YouTube.
No, Wing Commander 1 and 2 did not have FMV.
But Wing Commander got magical with Luke Skywalker joining in on 3.
Yes, that was fun, actually.
And Biff. Wasn't Biff from Back to the Future as his loyal sidekick?
Something like that.
That game is so good. 6 CDs. How many CDs full of game can we pack in? Neil deGrasse Tyson doesn't like gravity. He got on Twitter and started nitpicking.
No, he's fine. He loves gravity.
I think the fact that he's nitpicking on it tells me that he actually kind of likes it.
He said he actually loved it.
So he came out afterwards and said that he loved it. Yeah.
Right.
He's a nitpicker because he's
I mean, you didn't see him come out and nitpick Prometheus, right?
There was enough Prometheus nitpicking on the internet.
Well, you know what I'm saying, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a lovely movie.
Did you see it, Norm?
Yeah, I saw it.
It's attempting to do something interesting in science fiction that's actually science-based, if not perfect. You know, so, of course, they're
It's way more science than science fiction. The fiction stuff, the stuff that he nitpicked was, like, very, very technical in terms of, like...
There's not enough propellant
some angular momentum things and...
Well, the fact that you can't change orbits that radically as they do...
And the biggest plot hole is
you need obtainium.
The physical difference between the distance between the Hubble and the ISS,
right.
They're 100 miles apart or something.
It's more like they're one is much deeper in the gravity well. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And
also, why was a medical doctor working on a Hubble repair?
Engineer.
Oh, engineer.
Yeah.
Okay.
The movie is technically amazing, and just reading about how they shot the scenes, 90% of the movie is CG.
So it's just faces.
It's just faces.
Yeah, but it's great because it's CG done where you
hold your suspension of disbelief.
Right. Yeah. It's not just there to make things go boom. Right.
So yeah.
The way they shot it, they created this box room with basically a holodeck where they suspended the actors and had 4,000 LED panels or LEDs around. And they projected the environments onto the walls of this room to give the actors idea reference of where they were and what direction to look at. And then the LEDs generated every single lighting scenario.
And they were on robots, so they could move
The cameras was then on a robot to shoot the actors' faces.
Both the lights and the cameras were on robots. And I think the actors, too, maybe even. It's crazy.
All motion-controlled puppetry and pre-animated.
Kind of like what they did to do the spaceships in Star Wars, the robot camera stuff, but with the lights and the actor and the camera.
Well, yeah, stuff in Star Wars is motion control, but motion control stuff is
way beyond.
Yeah,
it's crazy. There's the article in EW explained how a lot of it worked, but I thought it was pretty good. Panasonic's shutting down its last plasma screen factory.
Yeah.
This makes me kind of sad.
It leaves LG and Samsung standing.
I really like my Panasonic plasma. I think it's a really great TV, and there are definitely problems. It's not the most power efficient thing I've ever owned, but the fact that you can get true blacks out of it and it looks really good.
Yeah, I have an LG, one of their THX certified plasmas. It's lovely. But I think one of the things that's going to happen is that I have seen zero announcements. That's zero with like a goose egg of any 4K plasma displays.
Yeah,
I think it's writing's on the wall.
Well, so Panasonic invested heavily in this, and the TV market has kind of collapsed in the last 4 years.
Part of the problem is Panasonic itself is not doing well. I mean, it's financially on the ropes. Kind of like Sony is.
$15 billion in the hole or something over the last 2 years.
I think the plasma TVs were selling well. It's just that it was a relatively niche market and they need to dump stuff because they're in the hole.
Well, and the TV companies, Samsung came in with a lot of cash and started selling TVs. Really good TVs very cheaply, and so the high margins on the high-end products went away.
Right, and then Vizio comes at the low end and sells pretty good stuff at low prices.
Yeah, without marketing it at all.
Right.
And then on top of all of that, there was a massive boom in TV sales during the HD changeover, mm-hmm. And I think they were expecting people to buy new TVs every 2 or 3 years. And they, why would you do that? That's right. Crazy. So,
right.
So yeah, this TV market's not so good right now.
Yeah. It's like somebody asked me, are you going to buy a 4K? I said, I'll buy 4K TV when there's 4K content.
Yeah. Would you buy a Panasonic? If you were in the market for a big TV today, would you buy a plasma still?
Today? Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Because it's years before you see 4K content.
Yep. Yeah. And it's cheap enough now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen sales on relatively good plasmas now, you know, 50 inches for $800. Right?
The reason I ended up with the plasma is when I went in, because I went in to look at LCDs in the price range of the plasma that I ended up buying.
Right.
And they were 50 inches. And for the same money, I could get a 58-inch plasma that right. looked better.
Yeah.
So why would I not do that?
Right.
Did you see that video of the guy sending like 200,000 volts through his plasma?
No, it's awesome.
Okay.
It destroys the screen completely.
Well.
You don't say.
Yeah.
But it's like the screen like shoots lightning.
It's okay. A cool video. We'll post it on the site. Fitbit Force. I haven't seen this. Is this new? Does this come out
today?
It
is new.
It's like a little wristwatch thing.
It's the Fitbit
Flex. Didn't they announce this a while ago?
No, they had Fitbit Flex at CES, which is a wristwatch, but that had four LED lights to indicate battery.
This one actually has an OLED display.
This one has a display.
So like the fuel band.
Yes, except it doesn't run across the band. It's a small little screen, and it will connect with phones.
It's Bluetooth, the Bluetooth 4 low power stuff and all that, I assume.
Yeah. And NFC.
The Fitbit Zip that I've been carrying for the last year is great. And it's $50. You just put it in your jeans pocket. It disappears.
This one also has an altimeter, so it's also
stairs. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you take the stairs.
A little expensive, but.
How much is a little expensive?
$130.
That's okay. But what does the fuel band cost? $150?
The fuel band is like $99.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Same with the Flex, I think.
I like the Fitbit software better, I think, than I like the Nike stuff.
Yeah, well, most of my workout stuff is bicycling now, so that doesn't actually apply to me very well.
You need a GPS that just tells you how far you've gone.
I have a Garmin 410. No, 810, excuse me.
Have you tried stuff like Runkeeper and things like that for
I
that?
Have a couple of different bicycle apps on my iPhone that I have tried out, and they work pretty well. The problem with them is that once you start to get into things like, oh, I want to track my cadence, you have to buy extra hardware, and it starts to get the price point. You know, I'll just,
just buy the real thing. Yeah. Okay. The Nikon D610 is out or announced. Is out.
So
what's the? I don't know what this is.
Scuttlebutt. So the scuttlebutt. This is rumors. You know, I'm some extent speculating, but the rumors that I've read is that Nikon got this out the door with a new shutter mechanism, so they could sort of wipe away the problems they had with the Nikon D600, which had a lot of problems with the shutter mechanism.
That's what you have.
Yes. I had problems with it. I had to send it in twice, and they finally fixed it. Right?
Wow.
And
What were the shutter problems specifically?
So it's throwing oil onto the sensor, particularly in the upper left side.
Wow.
And so the new one has a completely new shutter mechanism. It's got a few slightly tweaked specs. It's slightly faster, 6 frames per second. And it's kind of a neat mode, particularly if you're doing into things like wedding or school photography, where you can shoot at 3 frames a second in quiet mode now.
So, I mean, Canon's already had the quiet shutter. I'm interested to see how quiet
Nikon's
that is.
Had the quiet shutter too, but this is shooting continuous.
Yeah. Okay, continuous and quiet. Right. Mm. Okay, I want to hear it in person.
And a few other tweaks, but it's still got the same 39-point focus system. Mm-hmm. I thought at least they'd come up with a 51.1 that's on the D7100, but they didn't.
So, I mean, that's why it's called the 610 and not the, you know.
Well, the D7100 is the D7100 and not the D7000, so it's still incremental. I mean, at any rate, it's not a big jump. If you have a D600 and it's working for you, don't buy it. D610, there's no point.
Well, that was a fascinating photography discussion.
And I think that every Nikon should give every D600 user who ever had to send their D600 in for service a 610 for free.
Are you a D600 user?
Yes.
Did you have to send
yours in for service?
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
What an amazing, interesting overlap there, Lloyd.
Right.
Norm has written Sony on the list of things to talk about.
I have not.
Why?
I did not write that.
Did you not write that?
Nope.
You must have written it then. Well, you're the only other guy. I didn't write it. I don't have.
I'm deleting Sony from the list. I don't remember what that was for. The original teaser trailer for Star Wars, the one that came out before Star before anybody knew it.
Pre-1978.
I'm going to set a scene. Imagine a world where the thing that George Lucas is best known for is American Graffiti.
Right.
where we don't know what a Wookiee is, where no one has ever seen a lightsaber or an X-Wing or a Death Star or a Millennium Falcon. Imagine how you would explain to theater goers who are in the theater to see things like, I guess, Jaws and
Flash Gordon.
Well, 20th Century Fox Pictures. Yeah. So it would be maybe like Chinatown.
Where this is like the late 70s. Yeah, you had stuff like that where the big hits. Also, nobody ever went to see the movie more than maybe twice, right?
Yes. So imagine you're in a theater and something comes up and there's, and it's also science fiction. Like you, when you think science fiction, you think 2001,
right?
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
So imagine if you're a young George Lucas, bearded and short.
And you don't have children yet.
Right.
This is important.
This is important. And you're trying to lure a world full of teenagers who are into things like disco and rollerball to come see your new science fiction epic, Star Wars. So what are the things that you show and what's the sales pitch?
You show a lightsaber. You show the final the X-Wing attack.
You'd think that.
Yeah, that's what I would show.
So they did. There was a little tiny bit with Ben Kenobi cutting the arm off of the
wall. You never see the arm fall to the ground.
You know, you just you don't see the arm fall off.
Right.
There's a heavy emphasis on romance between Luke and Leia. There's a lot of Carrie Fisher in this trailer. There's a lot of Chewbacca. There's a, like,
which
your,
is really,
your
yeah,
friendly dog reaction. Buddy. Yeah. Hardly any Harrison Ford.
Right.
Virtually, I don't know that there was any Harrison Ford,
which is really
actually
interesting, because Harrison Ford was a major character in American Graffiti. He was sort of the secondary guy that, you know, sort of the competition for the love interest.
Exactly, yeah. So he was a known actor, and I think Mark Hamill was completely unknown at that point.
Right.
Anyways, the Star Wars, the official Star Wars YouTube channel posted the 1976 teaser for Star Wars. It's before they had the logo. Remember when we went to Rancho Obi-Wan and saw all the different, the evolution of the logo? It's before even the one with the pointy letters.
The Ralph McQuarrie logo.
It is just Star Wars written in a big-ass, bold, Futura-looking flat. Yeah, text. Flat. Blue, not yellow.
John Ivy would like it.
Exactly.
Sorry, didn't say that.
It's up. You can watch it. It's really long. It's crazy long. It has basically every plot spoiler in the movie in there, except it doesn't show the trench run because I bet they hadn't finished that yet. And it's definitely worth taking a look at. It was really cool. So, okay. I guess that'll do it.
Speaking of Star Wars.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Hold on. We got to play some music and thank our sponsors, and then we'll do what we were testing.
Okay.
This episode of This Is Only a Test is brought to you by Squarespace, the fast and easy website that makes it the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off of your first purchase, you can go to squarespace.com and use offer code TEST. Squarespace has a ton of support people, so if you need help, you can get that. I think they have like 70 people that are working there all the time to keep you up and running. And it's apparently easy to point and click your way to a responsive HTML website design using Squarespace. So that's it. Thank you guys for sponsoring us. And if you want to support This Is Only a Test, then we'll go to squarespace.com and use offer code TEST. So Norm, what have you been testing?
I just got something in today. I haven't bought many things recently.
We've been kind of busy this week. It's been an especially busy week because the Inventor and stuff ended. We've been traveling. We watched 200 and some submissions for the Inventern and were alternately horrified and blown away by the stuff that people sent in. Saw some absolutely amazing projects that people have built.
Waiting on the Surface, new Surfaces to come in.
That should be soon.
Holding a big part of my calendar out for that. And something.
Are we going to split? Are we going to divide and conquer the Surfaces? Because they're sending both, I think, right?
We'll see.
Okay. You used Google Glass a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, I went through a TSA with it.
The SE10 update came out a couple of days ago. I spent a little bit more time with it. Still unimpressed by the camera.
Camera's not very good.
No, it's bad. At this point, it's transitioned from middling cell phone to bad cell phone camera.
Transition.
Like, have you guys the phone out? Cameras have gotten better, and that one hasn't.
Have you checked out the what they call the Google Glass for Fitness, which is, I can't remember who makes that.
That sounds...
It's really tuned for bicyclists,
like an activity camera.
Yeah, right. It's and it looks a little bit like, except it's built in like a pair of sunglasses.
Okay.
And but the camera is just as light, and the whole thing
does. You can put sunglasses on that.
Right. So I thought that was interesting. That was out like 6 or 8 months before even the beta.
So the SE10 update, which is the most recent one, the October update, I guess, adds a couple of new things. There's a I'm completely blanking. There's more Google Now cards. There is, last month they added the ability to use voice commands in some of the apps. So you can upload stuff to Path and Tumblr. Maybe not Tumblr. Maybe it's Path and Evernote using voice commands.
Okay.
And third-party apps theoretically are coming with the October update, which is a pretty big deal, although nothing's out yet. So Norm's going to try that for a while and see what he thinks. Spend some quality time with the Google Glass. I'm interested to see if your experience on it is better than mine since you're using Android. Because the lack of GPS, like having to have a tablet in my bag to get GPS.
Just for GPS, but not internet.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi for GPS, Bluetooth for internet.
No, it was Bluetooth. It would connect to two Bluetooth devices.
Two Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Bleh.
It was a pain in the ass, and there was always weird stuff happening. You also get text with it, which is nice, because I would only get, emails. I don't even know. I think you lost all. You couldn't even do Google Hangout texts with it, which is weird. Norm, when you were in New York a couple weeks ago, you met Dave Arnold, who is. I am fascinated by Dave Arnold.
Dave Arnold's a really interesting dude. We talked about this briefly when we came back from New York, but he is the chief culinary technologist of the French Culinary Institute. A leader in molecular gastronomy, and as many people have pointed out when we last talked about him, the puffing gun that let's see, it's something that Jamie and Adam did do on MythBusters.
I didn't know that when you guys went to see it.
But they had to wear bomb suits with the puffing gun.
Were you wearing a bomb suit when you did the?
What was the
myth they tested? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Was it that those things could explode and kill people?
I don't think they tested.
Were they wearing like Hurt Locker style bomb suits? Like the big, huge, puffy Michelin? Oh, you didn't watch the video. Okay.
I have been told. We did not wear bomb suits. We stood behind some bulletproof glass or thick plexiglass.
Okay.
And puffed these things.
So what is a puffing gun, Norm?
A puffing gun is a cast iron sealed container that you heat up and there is a gauge that you detect the pressure.
Does it like rotate or something so the stuff doesn't burn on the bottom?
It's spherical. It's conical, so you can rotate it.
Okay.
To even out the temperature. But you're increasing heat and pressure on the inside. And so the things that you put inside this cast iron container, the heat and pressure will cause the water to become more volatile and expand. And it will...
The starches liquefy is what happens under heat and
water,
pressure.
Water and anything will come out.
Sure.
And when you release the container, then it expands. The individual things, such as corn, rice, or whatever, will puff up like popcorn.
Okay.
And it's used in Asia for street foods.
Lloyd seems unimpressed.
It's how we have puff cereal.
Yeah, it's how not Rice Krispies. This is important to note, but how like Kix and all your
corn pops,
your pop cereal works, and so he's been experimenting with popping stuff that isn't normally.
But it's a very violent explosion when you
really even in the factories that make the cereal.
In the old days of cereal making, there's a video about this on YouTube that's great. In the old days of cereal making, the guy invented this machine, and it was I want to say Shakers or Quakers. I can't remember. I always mix them up. Quakers. They were looking for the blandest food possible to aid digestion like retreats or whatever. So the guy invented this machine, and then the cereal companies got hold of it. They're like, wait, kids will love this. It's crunchy. It's great. So they started doing these, and there's an image in this film of a factory with dozens and dozens of these machines, and they were doing them in batches. So like one machine would go, the next machine would go, the next machine would go, and then they'd load up, and the stuff would explode on the conveyor belt, and it would go get put in bins.
And everybody that worked there had hearing problems.
I'm sure it was not a good place to work. It was the 20s, right? After World War II, they discovered a way to do it on a linear conveyor belt motion. Okay. So I at some point that changed and it stopped being a batch thing and started being linear. But
so the modern puffing gun is kind of like the new way for amateur chefs to do stuff.
It is a way for people to do things with high pressure that is relatively safe.
Okay.
I wouldn't call it safe at all. I don't think anyone, no one outside their lab is doing it right now in kitchens or anything.
In the U.S.
And so they're taking this old technology that people are kind of still using or in street foods in other parts of the world and experimenting it and trying to put as many different types of food in it to see what would happen when you have this type of mechanism.
So they've done all sorts of, like, what did you do crazy stuff or did it stop working before you guys left?
Their protective case blew up when we were there. So we only got to do it twice.
Yes, wow. That does sound really safe.
Sometimes, sometimes for science, Lloyd, you have to take chances. So that's Dave. The video's on the site now. You should watch it if you're interested in food science stuff. I bought a pair of headphones. I realized I didn't have a nice pair of headphones to listen to music, and I've been working at home a little bit more lately. So I picked up the Wirecutter recommended Sony MDR 7506 over the ear headphones because I didn't want to carry my Sennheisers home from work every day. Because that's what they recommended as the best $150 headphone, and they cost $70. So that seemed about right.
So is it good?
They're really nice.
Oh, okay.
The only complaint I have is that the ear cups, I generally like completely like the I don't know the terminology, but not on ear headphones, which is what these Sonys are.
Right.
I like ones that completely ensconce your ears and the pads rest outside your ear.
Yeah.
So these rest on your ears and they get a little bit sweaty.
The most comfortable headphones I ever wore of the kind you're describing are Beyers. Beyer Dynamics.
Oh, really? Yeah, were they expensive?
Yeah, they start at like $150. They go way up from there. I think I had a pair of like $300 ones. Very soft cushion. Really, really like.
Well, so these Sennheisers have great, like, foamy, soft, velvety cushions.
Yeah.
And I've worn them on multiple Oktobercasts in the past, so for 24 hours straight, essentially. Right. These guys, I talked to Brian at Wirecutter about this, and he said, yeah, there's actually a pair of, like, the cups that come with the Sonys by default are, like, leathery plastic or leather, I don't know which. You can replace them with foam. Like smooth, softer ones that collect the sweat better or something.
Right.
I don't know, or breathe better. But they're quite good and they're $70. So it's hard to go wrong with that. And the coils, it's a coily cable, which I like for desktop use.
Okay.
Because then it doesn't get all snarled up and twisted. What else do we have? On that tip, the Comply earbud tips, the soft memory foam ones for your in-ear in your headphones I've been using lately, and they're an awesome $15 upgrade for any pair.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
I mean, they lock out the noise a lot better. Mm-hmm. They make them comfortable to wear for long periods of time, not 24 hours, but two or three. They make every pair of headphones I've tried them on sound better.
Right.
Earbuds. Anything else? Lloyd, is it time for the board game?
One thing, I have to make a correction real quick.
Okay.
I was talking about the AMD GPUs earlier, and I said R7, R8, R9. I said something about R8 270s or something like that. All of them, what AMD call the enthusiast GPUs, are R9s, not just the 290X, which they haven't really talked about much yet.
Oh, so even the rebadged ones are R9s?
The R9 280 is the same as the 7970. The R9 270 is the same as the 7870 and so
That's
on.
That's lame.
Yeah.
One of the things I thought was kind of nice is that since these are the same GPUs, they're letting people crossfire them.
That's good.
So you can crossfire a 7970 with whatever the new version of that.
R9 280.
Yeah.
Hopefully they fix the driver. I think they have fixed drivers a lot.
How many video cards now have had the 280 moniker?
I think that they, NVIDIA and ATI both, use numbers that were good on the other side. So like the 280 was a great NVIDIA.
Right.
The GeForce GTX 280 was a great card. And they did that. NVIDIA did the 4870 a few years ago. Which was also a great 4800 series, whatever, was also a great card.
Mm-hmm.
I think they both go back and forth. I think they do it on purpose.
There's only so many model numbers you can have as well, unless you go like the GeForce 10 million or something.
It's terrible. Video card naming is the worst
inflation.
Thing in the world.
It's naming inflation.
It really is. Lloyd?
Okay, so board games. We were talking about Star Trek. Star Wars. Excuse me,
we were. Star Trek. Don't say Star Trek, we mean Star Wars. People get really angry.
Yes, I know. So I got the X-Wing, the Star Wars X-Wing miniature games. There's a giant hole in the table where you can throw money.
Yeah, I figured. I looked at that.
Actually am not so much into collecting all the miniatures to play the games because I don't actually have anybody that wants to play this game. See? But I got a few of them that I'm keeping in the shrink wrap because they're so cool. Like this.
They are so cool.
Lambda class shuttle, yeah. Right?
That is a great miniature.
And the wing actually folded up and down.
The miniatures are awesome for this game.
And of course, there's the.
The Millennium Falcon.
The Millennium Falcon, right?
That's awesome. Yeah.
Now,
I haven't seen the new ones lately.
So Fantasy Flight announced at this year's Gen Con that their Wave 4 of this is going to include I forget which one of the rebel cruisers.
Like the Mon Cal cruiser or the one with the long narrow spine, right. and the engines and the drop,
and they're going to try to keep it relatively in scale.
Wow,
so
really?
This thing is like 2.5 feet long on your table, and I don't know how much. I mean, I can't imagine how much it's going to cost.
How much is one of these?
This is like $30.
$30 for a miniature.
Yep.
So I played.
This is why I'm not taking out of the shrink wrap.
It's going to accumulate value.
Right.
I played this at PAX not last year, but the year before, because that's it. They announced it either at PAX or at Gen Con that year. I can't remember which one was first. But I'm not a huge turn-based strategy game just because I think they're kind of, those games are a little bit tedious and not super fun. And like, my wife isn't into that kind of game either, so it's difficult for me to find somebody to play with.
Right.
But the miniatures, it was a fine game if you're into that sort of thing.
There's a nearly identical game. I said Star Trek earlier. There's actually a nearly identical Star Trek game where...
You brought that in.
The WizKids guys... No, I didn't bring that in. That was a different game.
Okay.
There are many Star Trek games. Anyway, the WizKids guys actually licensed the system that Fantasy Flight uses from them, the game system, which is actually based on an older game system using World War One fighters, interestingly enough. But that's another thing. Anyway, and they're doing a Star Trek one variation. And it's just, the rules are almost the same. If you play, you can't intermingle them, but the rules are similar enough.
So Enterprise versus a Star Destroyer?
Well, they're the wrong scale, right? So the Enterprise is like this bit. Like
is this the one in the box that comes with the Klingon ships? And the, I have that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then
they're all different eras, too.
Right.
Do they not have Star Destroyers in the X-Wing game yet?
No, because it would be probably longer than this room.
Well, there are small Star Destroyers and big Star Destroyers.
Right. That's true.
We don't have to all be executives.
And a Death Star, I mean, a Death Star probably is a city block.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other problem.
My game of Risk Legacy, which started last May 2012.
Did you finish?
No, but we opened the last packet that's not the secret packet.
Awesome.
And the last packet is amazing.
Well, you see, we hit a stopping point in our game where we can't play anymore.
Because you don't have the people around?
No, it's not even that. It's the fact that, you know, one of the things that can happen to the game is that certain players, when they win, get to do certain stuff.
Yes.
Well, this one guy won a couple of times, and he basically made Australia completely invulnerable.
Did he win? Because the last packet there are things that can nullify.
Yeah, but this is early in the game. So you have to get to that last, but it's like we're four or five games in. And it is impossible to dislodge him, and he now wins every time. So we've actually found a flaw in the game. It's like
the rich get richer, Lloyd.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, you've got to roll real well early on.
Right.
Choose a placement first.
Right.
Or you play when he's not around.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. What happened to Australia? What did you guys do to me?
Yeah, you just put
sorry.
Some,
put prison
some
colony.
Weaknesses, but you could nuke it.
Yeah.
Put like three nukes on Australia.
Right. So Risk Legacy, we should explain for people who don't know what it is, because we've talked about it before, but it's a new spin on Risk rules that has a persistent campaign.
Yes.
And basically you play it, what, 15, 16 times?
Roughly 15 games, yeah.
Yeah.
And every time you play, you permanently change the game, right?
You're writing every game, the winner gets to do something, either put stickers on the board that change, add cities or create make territories weak, buffs or
so the
debuffs.
Game evolves every time you play.
The other thing, the rules change too. You get little stickers that you actually stick into the rule book in certain places that change the rules of the game.
It sounds fascinating.
There's that one pouch on the bottom of the box, and we vote before every game we play whether we're going to open that pouch because it says do not open ever. And
Is the rule that you're supposed to vote to decide if you open the do not open packet?
No, our house rules that we vote to decide, and we've never.
So there is no rule
consensus
in the final packet that said you can now open this packet or anything?
No.
No, that's interesting.
No.
Rob Davio, who designed Risk Legacy, is kind of spun out of Hasbro and doing his own thing now. And he announced a game he's calling one of his legacy line, interestingly enough, but it's not Risk based. It's a turn-based strategy game in which, like Risk Legacy, you permanently mod the game as you play it through it.
That whole permanently changing the rules thing is really novel. It seems like as big a potential change to board games as like the birth of the deck builder in what 2008 right. or whatever.
Totally makes the game worth $40. Right.
And I believe that Plat Hat Games picked it up, so it's actually going to be published.
Okay, yeah. I mean, because it's the kind of thing that like if you look at most games, you buy it and you play it 10 times at most,
right?
And then you never come back to it with obviously some exceptions,
right?
But it's super interesting.
Speaking of a game that I've been playing that's fun and picking up my biggest box.
Good segue.
Here. So this is called Yido, Y-E-D-O. Okay. Not to be confused with a similar game called Ido, also about Japan, feudal Japan. Have you played Lords of Waterdeep?
I have not played it, but I have watched people play it extensively.
Right. This is like Lords of Waterdeep, but one notch higher.
So Lords of Waterdeep is basically a D&D campaign that you don't have to DM. It's the game DMs it for you.
It's a Euro game in which you place little workers around to do missions and stuff like that, right? So it's actually a pure board game. It's just a D&D flavored board game. It's not even like the ones where you run through the dungeon, right?
That's what I'm thinking about, the ones that you run through the dungeon.
This is not like that at all. So Lords of Waterdeep is a pure Euro game. It's worker placement, all that stuff.
Okay.
This is like that too, only it's got a lot more flavor. The flavor actually is baked more into the game, including all the mission cards and stuff like that. Real fun. Lots of wheels spinning in the air, though. You kind of got to watch what you're doing.
But worker placement. Okay. So kind of, if you're not familiar with Lords, like Power Grid or Agricola or something like that.
Right.
Cool. Lots of workers or a few small
numbers? Just a few. Small numbers. Okay. So you got to really make your decisions carefully. And then I brought a game that I thought you might be interested in. Well, you and your wife, you played a lot. This is a multiplayer game.
I've looked at this before, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, this is pretty good for two players, actually. It's a tile lane game with a lot of sort of mind-bending powers in each special character. It's
like Voluspa?
Voluspa. Something to do with Norse mythology. The name does not roll off the tongue. But
have you played it yet?
Yes, it's pretty good.
Good? Okay.
It actually is very good. I played it a couple times as two players.
I'll definitely check it out. I don't think you've been on since, but Gina and I started playing the two-player variant of Seven Wonders.
Uh-huh. And With a little robot?
Uh-huh.
With a little robot player?
Well, you take turns playing the third player.
Oh, okay.
So one person plays one turn, one person plays the next, and it ends up giving you, like, it adds the ability to screw your opponent in a way that kind of Seven Wonders typically doesn't have.
Unless you get the expansions,
and it's quite good.
Right.
Like thoroughly have enjoyed it.
And the interesting thing about Seven Wonders, one of the things I like about it is that the three player game is very different from a six or seven player game. Very different.
Well, it's the kind of thing that after we played the three player game enough that both of us are fairly competent. We're like at a 50-50 win loss ratio now, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And we both want to get like a 6 or 7 person game going. So because I think. Like that game, especially where a lot of games where you take turns suffer when you have a large crowd because of the way the mechanics work and the fact that you really are only playing with the people right next to you.
Right.
It seems like it would go pretty fast. Mm-hmm. So
it does. It's like I played seven players of Seven Wonders where it takes like a half hour, 40 minutes.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
I'll definitely check this out. This sounds great. I like tiling games.
Have you heard of the new Resistance? The new version?
Resistance Avalon?
Coup or Resistance Coup. Avalon? Yeah, Coup. Yeah, I actually kickstarted that.
Yeah.
What's Resistance Coup?
It's just a sort of souped up version, better art.
Well, what's kinda Avalon like, then?
Avalon is the just an Arthurian themed resistance. Avalon
oh, but is it the same rules as normal Avalon?
They're slightly different.
Yeah.
And Coup has some deception built in. You can lie.
Right.
And it's a shared pool of stuff.
Yeah.
Is the Kickstarter for Coup still in?
It's dead. No, it's just closed a long time ago. But they're going to ship it as a regular game. They just did that to get the game done.
Is it K-O-O?
No, C-O-U-P. C-O-U-P.
Oh, coup. Like coup d'etat.
Right.
What do you, when you guys play Resistance, do you play, so usually when I play Resistance is with people who aren't real good at board, who aren't super familiar with like German, you know, uh-huh. board game rules.
Well, I mean, you just tell them it's like Mafia or Werewolf.
Well, they sort of get that. But most do you play with the roll cards, the special roll cards, or do you just play with the generics?
Both. I play both.
Okay.
Both ways.
Well,
cards are more fun, but you got to have like people who are kind of gamers to understand what's
going on. Yeah, that's the thing I found is that usually that just adds a level of confusion that makes it not. I frequently find myself playing Resistance in bars using coasters as tokens and stuff like that. Right. So anyway.
So do you know who Alan Emmerich is?
The name's familiar, but
Alan Emmerich was strategy games editor for Computer Gaming World way, way back.
Oh, okay.
Before Windows even.
So wow.
He's now one of the principal guys at a company called Victory Point Games. And he's all these games. This one is really interesting, though. You take chess, right? Not vanilla chess. This is modified chess. And you take Dominion and you put them in a blender, and you turn the blender on them and pulse it for a few minutes.
So what? So you instead of using pawns, you use a deck?
No. What happens is you can't bring your characters.
This is called For the Crown, by the way.
For the Crown, right. You can't bring your units out to the board, which is a normal chess-like board, until you play certain cards. And you buy the cards through winning battles.
Huh.
And
you're instead of deck building, you are like unit building.
Right.
For a chess game.
Right, right. So, but there are more different pieces than there are in normal chess, where there's like knights that can do extra stuff and things like that. So it's really way fun. Way fun.
Wow.
Two players.
I found when I was back home with my parents in January, or in June rather, I found a copy of Chess in the Third Dimension by Scoremore.
That's not the same as the old 3D chess where you had three boards stacked in.
It's three boards stacked in. It's not like the Star Trek style of 3D chess.
But it is three
boards stacked
three
up.
3x8 boards.
Yeah,
right?
And you can your knight can go down two boards and over one.
Right.
And yeah, so I'm going to bring that in for Wes to monkey around with, because I never actually played it. But
you should bring that to Oktoberfest.
I think the worst thing in the world would be watching us try to play chess on Oktoberfest. That sounds really brutal.
No, one move an hour, or two moves an hour, something like that.
Oh.
It's your turn, Will.
It's only 48 hours.
It's only 24 hours, man. But yeah. Anyway, so this is always great. Have you played anything lately? I mean, obviously you've played some stuff lately, but what?
You come out
board games.
Games. Yeah. Well, I've been having a lot of fun with you. I play that three or four times now. It's actually very good.
Two players, good with two players or more?
Not really. I think it's a 3-player minimum game.
Okay.
And what's the other one that I played recently quite a bit? I'm trying to think. It's not rolling off the tongue right away. I don't remember.
Is this only two players or is this
No, it's
four?
2 to 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Voluspa is what I was pointing at if you're listening to the audio version. So I guess that's it for what we're testing.
I should say I do have an R9 270X card in.
So a 7980?
Basic 7870.
Carry the 3. Right. Let's play some music and talk about, take some questions maybe. We have some questions from the audience. If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Keep your questions short. We like audio questions, but keep them under 45 seconds and try not to sound like you're recording them from some sort of undersea base with echoes and all sorts of weird bubbling noises. Here is the first question, and it is a hypothetical. It comes from Ryan. He wants to know, if you could do anything in the known universe, what would it be? And you could do anything. If you could do anything in a fictional universe, what would it be? Norm.
That's his. Really,
he has an example.
Okay,
his example is: I've always wanted to see a star and a black hole collide and just watch the two fight.
That's the real universe. What's the
unrealistic idea would be making a spaceship that could survive in a star and then shrink down to the size of an atom and watch fusion happen, or see what's happening on a black hole from the inside without dying.
There are drugs you can take that will help you with that if you really wanted to.
So you're saying do drugs. That's your answer?
No, I can't help him.
That's a really
open-ended question.
Yeah, we need to think about that one for a while.
Yeah, more parameters.
Okay, I'll give you another question in the meantime. This is from Scott in Indianapolis. He says, hey, testers, I was wondering if you could think of a solution to an odd situation. My father-in-law has onset Alzheimer's but still has capabilities enough to drive where and when he pleases. My mother-in-law was told recently to get him a smartphone so he can be tracked, as his direction giving and taking is greately reduced lately. He's not very computer literate, so that's obviously not a great solution, but he does have his own cell phone, but it's an old flip-out one that's perfect for his needs, and we don't want to teach it. He doesn't want to learn how to use anything new. I was wondering if you could think of a solution, a la teen tracking with a GPS receiver in the phone. Is that feasible and or publicly available? Thanks, Scott from Indianapolis.
Is a GPS receiver to track his movements or so he can get directions?
No, both, I think. So that they can find out where he is if he gets lost. And
like, are there trackers you can buy from SkyMall? You can throw in the bottom of some
There's a large market for spy on your teenager products, which seems like what you want.
Right.
Usually they come with a monthly fee because they have a cell phone connection. And typically you have to charge them occasionally. So... beyond that, we haven't ever tested any of that stuff. But I figure this is an opportunity to ask the comments and see what people have used and come up with.
I want to hear your stories about tracking people.
I think
GPS trackers in someone's car.
Not a huge fan of tracking teenagers, but I understand the need to track adults if you have dementia and stuff like that.
Is there anybody that lives? Does he live alone, far away from his son? Or
it seems like he lives with his mother-in-law.
Okay.
So they're
because yeah. One thing that would come to mind would be do something like get an iPhone mount and the free iPhone 4, you know, you get from AT&T, you have to pay some X dollars, and stick Waze on it and just mount it in the car with a power, you know, attached to power.
Yeah.
And just leave that the only thing running.
So then at least you know where the car is.
Right. And it'll talk to him.
You don't even have to use Waze. You can just use Find My iPhone if you want.
Well, I'm talking about for him, you know, if he wants directions and stuff, right?
Oh, right. Oh, so use it as a fancy GPS, basically.
Right.
That's not a terrible idea. And with Siri and Apple Maps.
Well, you need more than a free iPhone 4. I don't think iPhone 4 supports. So you need a 4S, right, for Siri?
Oh, 4S needs Siri, yeah. But if you're on a family plan for data already, then that'll just be $10 extra a month, right? So that's not a terrible solution.
4S is the free one anyway now.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Oh, there you go. So you have Siri. Yeah. Perfect. Everybody wins. Now back to the first ridiculous question. If you could do anything in the known universe, what would it be? And if you could do anything in a fictional universe, I would travel through time. That's my
forward or backward?
Both.
You can't do backward.
First one, then the other. It's no, fictional universe. If I could do anything in the known universe, that would be it. I would travel through time. Because if you can travel through time, you can travel through space. The whole thing, all bets are off. I've really got to fix this cable. I don't know what's the problem with it.
Need more parameters.
I would go see dinosaurs. I think that sounds fun. For a minute.
If it was a fictional universe, I'd like to be a starship captain, right?
Really? That's where you'd go? Sure. You wouldn't go for despotic Time Lord?
No.
Okay. You wouldn't ruler of all you can see?
After like...
Yeah, I could be a god, too. I mean, if you know those...
Thor? Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
I don't want to go into space in a universe where like everything is so far apart and there's not a lot out there.
Well, so you're saying space travel sucks?
In my I think space travel
universe,
does suck.
No, in my fictional universe, I agree with you, but I think in my fictional universe, it would be like Star Trek, right? A couple of weeks to the next system.
Yeah, space travel only makes sense if there is a huge network of places to go and things to see and very quick access from point A to point B.
In modern Star Trek.
You mean like the Mass Effect universe?
Maybe something like that.
In modern Star Trek, space travel, it takes a couple of minutes to go from place to place. Due to the time dilation effects of a 2-hour film. I think that's it for questions this week. I thought we had a couple more, but I'm not, my stars are not working. Wait, here we go. Did we do this one? We did the history with the art. We did. How did you get started and what's your history with Arduino, right? Last week, Norm.
Yes, we did.
Okay. So that'll do it for questions. Send more questions in. We have a lot of questions for Adam and Jamie. We need to do more of those podcasts, I guess. If you have questions for This Is Only a Test, send. Wait. Lloyd's here. This is perfect. This is what I was looking for. David from Santa Barbara says, hey, guys, I'm interested in a camera to mount on the handlebars of my bicycle, but since I've never purchased a camera before, I'm looking for some guidance. I need it mainly to film a community bike ride that takes place on the first Thursday of every month. The bike ride begins in the evening and continues into the night, about 2.5 to 3 hours. The GoPro is the obvious choice, I hear, but I also thought the Ion Air Pro looked hot. Any suggestions or recommendations would be greatly appreciated. I'm looking for a camera that can record 3 hours of footage. It's waterproof in the $300 range and would be easy to mount on my bike.
Well, I'd go with one of the GoPros. And the reason is because the huge ecosystem of support hardware that's from both GoPro and third party people.
Yeah.
Because then you can do things like get extended battery packs, which you're going to want for your 3-hour thing because it doesn't have a very long battery life.
2 hours on a GoPro.
I would not trust a GoPro to record for 2 hours without overheating or failing in
some way. Well, the 2 is usually okay. The GoPro 3, we've had problems with overheating and failing.
We shoot 2 with Adam stuff.
And we've had 2s fail too.
Yeah. 2s fail. Like I know the overheating.
Right. I know that this is in the future. I mean, in the sense that this isn't a solution for him. But Garmin's doing one now.
Really?
Yeah, that's going to be tied into their GPS systems, their bike GPS systems. That should be pretty interesting.
Cameras on everything.
It's hard to beat the GoPro. We talked to somebody yesterday who's done GoPro lens replacements. So they've pulled the fisheye out and replaced it with a non-fisheye lens. And you can even get like lens replacements for fixed lens cameras, which is kind of crazy. That'll do it for questions this week. If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. And I guess that'll do it for us. Thanks to Squarespace, as always, for sponsoring us. Lloyd, anything you'd like to plug this week?
Plug? No.
No plugs?
I plugged the game, board games.
Yeah, yeah, board games are good. Norm,
Wait. Nope. So the
window's closed. Sorry, Lloyd. go ahead.
No, I've been playing around with some of these Korean monitors, right?
The cheap 27-inch panels?
You can buy them off Amazon directly now. You don't have to go through eBay and deal with sketchy guys.
Oh, that's nice.
Order them from Amazon. They still come from Korea.
So you don't get Prime shipping?
They don't have Prime typically. They take 4 or 5 days. And I also have one of the monoprice ones, right?
Okay.
Which are like $100 more, but then they come with a warranty and local, you know, they're local.
You can send them back to...
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The universal thing about all these is the display is generally pretty good and the stands are terrible.
Okay.
So
so what do they cost usually? Like what's the ballpark?
So the ballpark for the monoprice is between $400 and $450 depending on sales.
For a 27-inch 2560x1400
right.
panel?
IPS panel, right.
Pretty good deal.
And then the Korean ones you can find if you're willing to live with only DVI and a really, really crappy stand.
And not many on-screen controls or any type of
Yeah, right. No on-screen controls with the really, really cheap ones. Right.
So basically your no controller.
Card, right.
Yeah.
You can get those for like $300.
Huh. And what if you want like HDMI, a couple of HDMI ends, plug your consoles in or whatever? That's not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're 16:9 aspect ratio usually?
Correct.
Yeah. We did, Wes did a story about that for us last year.
I'm just saying they're easier to buy now than they used to be.
Having to go on eBay always seemed a little sketchy.
Right.
So
2560x1440, get two of those instead of one big 2560x1600 monitor.
And they have VESA mounts right on the back usually?
What's that?
They have VESA mounts usually?
Yes, most of them have VESA mounts. In fact, I've replaced – I have these really, really, really old or had these really, really old Gateway displays back when they were doing good displays.
Remember when they did that 30-inch but that had the first – it had the interpolator?
That was not a good display.
So, okay.
But their 24 inches are pretty good.
Okay.
And I took the stands off those, which are – VESA stands, and they're really good stands. They're going to rotate. They do everything. I stuck those on those 27-inch panels.
Nice. Oh,
there you go.
Yeah.
Norm, anything for you?
It's Oktoberfest coming up.
2 weeks from tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
or 2 weeks from the day before yesterday if you listen to this on Sunday, or maybe 3 days from now if you listen to this on the 22nd. Mm-hmm. It'll be October 25th, starting at noon Pacific time. That's 9 p.m. in the U.K., 8 p.m. in the U.K. I don't know. Use your time zone converter. You can figure it out. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening and have a good week. Today's outro comes to you from Jetlag. See you guys later.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
That's it.
Do you use YouTube live streaming? This sucks.
That's it.
I did that one before. Sorry.